You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
As of May 2nd, 2018, there's a new report that states that the black-legged tick is on the move. And experts are saying that this tiny critter continues to expand its range into the southern and western United States and into Canada. It's likely that the number of Lyme disease cases in North America will climb. A recent CDC study found that the cases of Lyme increased more than 80% between 2004 and 2016. And those are only reported cases. Now, the CDC estimates that there are more than 300,000 cases of Lyme infections in the U.S. each year, or 10 times as many as what is reported. Now, Lyme disease is becoming a true epidemic. And today we have Dr. Darren Ingles, who's a naturopathic doctor, author of the number one bestseller, The Lyme Solution, a five-part plan to fight the inflammatory autoimmune response and beat Lyme disease. This is a natural, comprehensive approach, and he specializes in Lyme disease, autism, chronic immune dysfunction, and uses diet, nutrients, herbs, homeopathy, and immunotherapy to help his patients achieve better health today. Thanks so much for being here on Wellness for Life, Dr. Darren.
Oh, thanks for having me, Suzanne.
You bet. You know, we first met last year at the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and I've been waiting to have you on my show to share your expertise on these natural strategies for Lyme disease. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure to share it.
Yes. Now, let's just go to the basics briefly, because I want to go into the solutions, as always. Now, What is Lyme disease, and how does one get it?
Yeah, so Lyme disease itself is actually a bacterial infection, and I think most people have experience with having, a sinus infection or bronchitis, but this one's a little bit different, and it's an infection that you acquire through generally a tick bite. And you mentioned that black-legged tick, or what they call a deer tick, tends to be the tick that's most commonly responsible for spreading Lyme disease. And, the New England and the central part of the Midwest tend to be areas that are more known for Lyme. But as the CDC just reported, we're now seeing it spread really throughout the country and even throughout the world. We talked about the 300,000 cases here in the U.S., but, they've had 65,000 cases in Europe and, they reported in Asia and Africa and really everywhere else. And when people get infected, this tick bite, unlike a mosquito bite, you don't usually feel. So you wouldn't necessarily know that you had exposure, but you can start to feel flu-like. You can get a headache and feel tired, and your glands might feel a little swollen. But it can also progress and cause joint pain. You can get numbness and tingling in your hands and feet. You can get what's called Bell's palsy, where one side of your face starts to droop. You can get a terrible headache. You can get a really high fever and chills. You feel like you kind of have a really bad flu. And over time, if it doesn't get treated right away, it can progress and start causing a lot more neurological symptoms. So people will describe balance and coordination problems, brain fog, memory problems. It can even progress into things like, MS and these other types of neurological diseases. So, the symptoms of Lyme are really quite varied and vague. In fact, there's upwards of 100 different symptoms associated with Lyme disease. So we call Lyme the great mimic or the great imitator because it looks like so many things. And unfortunately, because a lot of these symptoms tend to be vague, it is very commonly, either underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And there are so many people that I think have Lyme or symptoms of it that never experienced a tick bite. So, some people, they come in and they clearly have it. We've done the testing, but they've never been around ticks. I believe that there are other vectors such as spiders and mosquitoes and even fleas that can transmit it. Isn't that correct?
That's true. Yeah. The Europeans have actually done a little bit of research on this, and they've published at least a handful of studies showing that mosquitoes and fleas transmit it. It's kind of interesting. I actually have a colleague who's a doctor, and his son's an entomologist in Florida, and swear, oh, no, mosquitoes can't possibly transmit Lyme. And I'm like, well, who's looking?
Right.
And in the United States, I don't think that they've really looked into it very much. But again, there was a report that came out just in the last week. Again, identifying, other vectors as transmitting Lyme. So again, we have this growing body of evidence that it really just isn't ticks anymore, that these other biting insects, you know, may transmit Lyme as well. And I think that makes a lot of sense because we're seeing so many people now who live in areas of the country or the world that aren't necessarily known for Lyme, but they do carry, or, you know, they don't necessarily have these deer ticks, but they do have mosquitoes and fleas and flies and other things. So I think anything that potentially can carry blood, since that's how it's transmitted, certainly has that potential to transmit Lyme.
Right, right. You know, I was born in Korea, and it's definitely, mosquitoes is a big, big thing there. I mean, I actually got babesiosis from it. You know, I had babesiosis from a child, as a child, and I actually ended up treating it as an adult. I mean, I didn't know that's what I had, but as I was growing up and all these symptoms of getting, you know, sick all the time and fatigue all the time and all that, it ended up being babesiosis. Now, it wasn't Lyme disease, as in like the Borrelia, but definitely the co-infection I had, which is babesia, which you talk a lot about also in your book. I'd like to talk about your first chapter. What I love about it is that you immediately say that in your first chapter, antibiotics do not work. It's just not enough. I shouldn't say it doesn't work. It's just not enough.
Right. Well, you know, I think what we find is, you know, again, this is, you know, corroborated in the literature, and it's been my own personal experience. I mean, I wrote this book because I got Lyme disease myself, and I went through a lot of the same processes that people with Lyme go through, and I was on antibiotics for almost 9 months, and it practically killed me. I felt terrible. I was getting a lot worse. And I think, you know, in the acute phases of Lyme, I think antibiotics actually work quite well, but what ends up happening for so many people is that they don't catch it in those early stages, and by the time they figure out what's going on, at that point, the antibiotics really have been shown to be mostly ineffective. And even for a lot of people who start down that path, often, you know, they may get some temporary benefit. And as soon as they come off the antibiotics, they're kind of back to square one. So I don't really see it as a good long-term solution for really getting over, you know, the hump of Lyme disease. And in fact, there was an article that just came out in the last week showing that, you know, even after people had been on antibiotics for weeks, that Lyme still persisted. So, you know, we're starting to question more about the efficacy of, you know, antibiotics long term. Plus, you have to consider, you know, that antibiotics don't selectively kill the bad stuff. They kill the good stuff, too. And we've got so much research coming out about how important our microbiome is. And, you know, we used to think about the microbiome really just being consolidated to our gut. But we've now learned it's our skin and our lungs and our eyes and our nose. And, you know, we've got these beneficial, you know, microbes that surround us. So, you know, when we start killing these guys off, I mean, they're really there to protect us. And we know they play such an important role in our immune system. So what are we doing to our immune system when we start getting rid of a lot of the good guys? And I've seen patients, you know, who've been on antibiotics, not just for weeks or months, but I mean, years, literally. I think I have one patient who was on, you know, antibiotics continuously for 12 straight years. And, you know, what happens to your microbiome, you know, all your normal microbes, when you've been on antibiotics that long, and how long will it take to repopulate that back to normal? You know, I just think there's a lot of questions that get raised when, you know, the clinical efficacy is really a big question mark anyway. So I think, you know, my perspective is really about, you know, what can we do that's going to work in conjunction with the body than, instead of working against it?
Right. You know, the antibiotic use here in American and other countries is just way too much. And of course, you know, we got to talk about the fact that it's not just the microbiome, but it's the permeability issues, the damage it causes. The antibiotics cause damage to the gut lining, the mucosal lining. It's so important that creates the barrier of the inside compared to the outside of the body. And then we could also go into the barrier of the brain, the blood-brain barrier. That can become leaky too, with the fact that there are LPSs, lipopolysaccharides. Once you're damaging the gut lining, then the bacterial toxins go into the bloodstream, causing metabolic endotoxemia, which then, of course, causes brain, blood-brain barrier permeability and leakiness. And so much of that can trigger the symptomatology of neuro-Lyme, right? Neurodisease.
Exactly. And, you know, to make it worse, you know, we know that Lyme itself, the infection, can damage your mitochondria. And that gets compounded that the antibiotics damage your mitochondria. So here you've got an infection that's, you know, damaging this essential part of your cell that's really creating energy. and you're making it worse with the antibiotics. So for the people with Lyme that have, you know, this persistent fatigue, you know, it's darn near impossible to get over that hump. I mean, I think even we do all the nutrient things to help support it, if we're constantly, you know, damaging, you know, this part of the cell, you know, that energy is what drives, you know, neural function and, you know, muscular function and everything else. So I think, you know, we've underestimated that damaging effect between the leaky gut, killing the microbiome, damage the mitochondria. You know, I can make a longer list of more bad things that happen with the antibiotics than the good thing. And
right.
Look, you know, I've got some patients who've gone on, you know, oral or IV antibiotics, and it really changed their life. And great, you know, I'm all for whatever works. But I see more people who've been down that path. They haven't gotten better and maybe even gotten worse. And my feeling is, you know, at what point do you draw a line in the sand and say, hey, this really isn't the right path for me. We really need to start looking at other things.
Yeah, you mentioned that between the acute Lyme to chronic Lyme, just what at what stage? Is it a couple of months of antibiotics, 3 months? Where do you draw that line?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a nebulous line. I think, you know, for most people, that acute Lyme phase is probably something that happens within the first few months of exposure. And then when you start getting beyond that, you know, that's when you start moving more into that chronic Lyme. And look, you know, there are some people who get acute Lyme disease, they get treated right away, but there's still that small percentage that's going to go on and develop chronic Lyme symptoms, even with appropriate treatment. You know, again, I was one of those cases where, you know, I was treated within a few days of my tick bite, and I felt well for a while, but, you know, I just so happened that I got infected 3 weeks before I opened my own practice. And when I opened, you know, as a business owner, you're everything when you start your business. And I worked, you know, 10, 12-hour days. And after, you know, about 8 months of doing that, I started relapsing. And I realized it was really just all the things I was doing to my body that was just making it harder to keep my immune system in check. You know, not sleeping well, not eating well, lots of stress. You know, it was really the perfect storm to allow that Lyme to sort of manifest again and start to create problems. So I think for so many people, you know, that ends up being the case, is that there's often many other underlying issues, perhaps even before they got infected, that, you know, the antibiotics themselves are not going to fix. So you have to really look at Lyme as a whole body approach, and where the infection may be that initial part, it really sort of translates into a chronic autoimmune problem. And, you know, once I have realized that and I started really approaching it as an autoimmune disease versus just a straight up infection, you know, we started seeing a lot better improvement in our patients. So we have to, you know, always consider that, you know, that antibiotics, you know, they have their place. But for most people dealing with chronic Lyme, it's probably not going to be super beneficial.
Thank you. Let's go into your 5-part plan that you've outlined in your book. And, you know, each part, let's just give some great strategy tips that we can use today if we are suffering from Lyme.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first step, as we kind of alluded to, is really about the gut. You know, if you look at what the gut does, of course, it's important for, you know, digesting our food and absorbing it. And that's what keeps, you know, the motor running, so to speak. But, you know, the normal microbiome of the gut is, you know, responsible for up to 80% of our immune function. So when the gut's not functioning well, it's just really hard for the immune system to function well. And so many Lyme patients I see, you know, if we kind of go back in their history, they'll tell me that, gosh, you know, even as a kid, yeah, I used to have terrible gut problems, and it was constipation or diarrhea or gas or bloating or, you know, whatever that gut issue might have been. And certainly for anyone who has a history of antibiotic use, you know, I know myself, I was an ear infection kid. I was on antibiotics every month for the first 5 years of my life. And, you know, when you're on antibiotics that early in life, when your gut microbiome is really still developing, again, what does that do to your immune system long term? So in many cases, you know, we're kind of having to go back and undo damage that may have done, again, even previous to Lyme. But I think, you know, the gut is an amazing organ, and it's one that actually has a very fast replication cycle of its cells and can repair itself. So I talk very specifically about, you know, different nutrients and herbs that people can use to help, you know, repair the gut lining if it's been damaged, you know, how to repopulate the gut with probiotics, again, if you've been taking antibiotics or something else that may have damaged the gut flora. And so it really is a very specific strategy on, you know, getting your gut to function well. So, you know, I talk about nutrients like, you know, glutamine, which is an amino acid that's very important for cellular turnover and, you know, repairing that intestinal permeability, you know, digestive enzymes, which may be important for just helping people break down food. because once you've got leaky gut, you know, any partially digested food product can really become very stimulating to your immune system. So at that point, often you need a little bit of help of just, you know, breaking down your food. And then, of course, you know, there's lots of great information on various probiotics and different strains that each play a slightly different role in helping, you know, repopulating that gut flora kind of back to normal. And there's also a lot of really wonderful herbs that can be used. And we use things like, you know, slippery elm or marshmallow or geranium. And if people aren't really familiar with herbs, you know, these herbs have been used historically for, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years for, you know, chronic gastrointestinal problems. But, you know, I like the herbs because they're non-toxic. They're very inexpensive. They actually taste pretty good. So it's really easy for people to incorporate as part of their overall treatment plan. But, you know, the end result of that really is that, you know, we want to try and get the gut integrity back to where it was, or maybe if it goes back even since childhood, you know, make it better than it was so that you're really optimizing everything that you want your gut to do for you.
Can you take those herbs for long term?
Yeah, fortunately, you know, all these herbs that we talk about are completely non-toxic. You couldn't overdose on them if you wanted to. The one herbs I specifically mentioned, like slippery elm or marshmallow, they contain a component in it called mucilage. And mucilage, again, very healing to the gastrointestinal tract, but there's, you know, zero toxicity to it. So, you know, I have people who drink, you know, one cup every couple of hours when they feel very acutely inflamed, and it's, you know, generally tolerated very well.
Mm, fantastic. Then let's go into your second part of your plan.
So the second part of the plan is really about diet. And, you know, having gone through various diets myself, I've tried different things and, you know, trying various things with patients too. And, you know, if you go out on there and popular media, you'll see all these different things about the paleo diet. I think, you know, right now the keto diet, everyone and their brother's talking about for various things. And, you know, they all play a role and they all have therapeutic benefit. But, you know, when I really started thinking about it, I wanted to find something that, A, of course, worked and was clinically beneficial, but I also wanted something that I felt like was sustainable and that people could really make long-term plans on following this diet. And again, I'll probably call it more of a plan than a diet. You know, when I think of a diet, I always think of something where, you know, you're trying to lose weight and it's kind of a short-term thing. And what this really becomes is a lifestyle change. And this is just the way that you live your life and you eat. And what I've done is I've broken it down to three parts. You know, maybe I should preface for people who don't know is that the diet I'm recommending is an alkaline diet. And what that means is it's really about eating foods that make your body more alkaline. What we know in physiology is that your cells actually function best in an alkaline state, but we're exposed to so many things that make us more acidic. And the end result of that acid formation is inflammation. So inflammation in any tissue is going to make you feel pain. It's going to make you feel sore. It's going to interfere with the function of what you want your body to do. So what we're really trying to do is shift our chemistry in a way that really, again, optimizes the function of the cells. So what I've recommended as part of this alkaline diet is that you're basically eating a plant-based diet, but we try and limit animal protein to about 20% of your total intake for the week. So this sounds probably very familiar to a paleo diet, which a lot of people I know follow when they're trying to keep inflammation down. And I think the biggest difference is that when people follow a paleo diet is they tend to consume a lot of animal protein. And that can actually be very hard on your kidneys at some point. So it's not that you can't have that. It just doesn't become the bulk of your diet. So again, we try and keep it down to about 20%. And I think if we go back to our true hunter-gatherer days, this is probably the way we actually ate. You know, we didn't kill every day. We killed when we could. So we still foraged off the land and whatever we could pull off a vine or out of the ground. So again, there is some animal protein, so meat and fish and eggs, you can still have it. It's just not the bulk of your diet. And then I kind of have a list of, you know, these are things I really would avoid eating altogether. And these are foods that just tend to be very acid forming in the diet. And when we talk about an alkaline diet, I mean, we're not talking about the pH of the food. We're really talking about what happens when you consume that food. So for example, lemons themselves are very acidic, but if you drink lemon water, it actually makes your body more alkaline. So it's the end result of how your body processes that food that makes a difference. So on those list of foods I say are kind of no-nos, these are the ones that when they break down, they are actually very, very acid-forming in the body. So in a nutshell, that's, you know, any junk food, processed food, packaged food, that kind of thing. I also have people eliminate dairy products. And it just so happens a lot of people are allergic to dairy anyway, but from a metabolic standpoint, it tends to be more acid-forming. And the one on there that everybody absolutely hates me for is coffee. You know, I love coffee, but I would find that when I drank coffee when I was in the throes of Lyme, my neuropathy would flare up within minutes of drinking it. So, you know, coffee and alcohol and these things, unfortunately, are very acid-forming. And so my recommendation is that when people are really kind of getting going on this program, I really advocate that you stick to it and just, you know, follow it to the T. You know, at some point, you know, you can probably be more liberal with the diet and not have to worry about it. But when you're not feeling great, you know, we want to do everything possible to get you to feel well and keep that inflammation down. And so towing the line is really much better off. And I know there's always that thought, well, it's just a little bit. Well, depending on what it is, even that little bit might be too much for you. So the only way you really know is just follow it completely. And then again, as you feel better, you can start to play around a little bit and see what your body can tolerate. Again, I was off coffee for a good 3 or 4 years. I'm at a point now where I can drink it occasionally and it doesn't really bother me. So it's not like this has to necessarily be a lifelong process, but certainly in the initial phases, it's better just to toe the line.
Great. So alkaline, plant-based, 20% of your diet being protein, of course, lots of good fats and oils. What is your third tip?
So the third step is really about treating the infection. And as we just discussed, you know, the antibiotics, you know, have a very limited role. And again, certainly for anyone with chronic Lyme, you know, that's not necessarily going to be the better option. So I really talk about very specific herbal protocols that I personally use in treating my own Lyme. I've now used with thousands of patients. And what I like about herbs is, again, I think they work really well in conjunction with your body than instead of against it. You know, they don't damage your mitochondria. They don't damage your intestinal tract. There's a lot of positive benefits. And, you know, I always get the question, well, you know, are they as effective as antibiotics? You know, people feel like they're missing something by not taking an antibiotic. And there's actually a woman out here in Connecticut at the University of New Haven, Dr. Eva Sappi. And she herself got Lyme, so she started doing research on these herbs. And what was really interesting is that she actually found that the herbs were better than the antibiotics. You know, antibiotics in many cases only deal with Lyme in one specific form, and she found that the herbs actually work with Lyme in all its different forms. So, you know, this concept that, you know, antibiotics are the better way to treat Lyme really hasn't been shown to be true. And I think, you know, or herbs get a little bit shortchanged too, because in addition to treating the Lyme, you know, you have to consider that these herbs do a lot of other positive things for the body. You know, a lot of the herbs we use are anti-inflammatory. They help promote better circulation. They help boost your immune system. They help repair the gut lining. So we're getting a lot of additional benefit by using these plants versus just, you know, targeting, you know, the organism itself. And I think this is where a lot of people, you know, sometimes don't get well. You know, they're only focused on treating the organism and they're not really addressing a lot of these other issues that Lyme creates. So with these different herbs and herbal formulas, you know, we can, you know, address all of these different aspects kind of at the same time. So I really see it as a much more comprehensive approach to Lyme than the antibiotics of just killing the organism. So, you know, if you go online and you read about, you know, herbs to treat Lyme, there are literally, you know, dozens and dozens of them. And there's a handful of protocols out there that are very popular and common. So I outline, though, again, the ones that I personally use. And I sort of give it a list in hierarchy of, you know, this is the one you should do first, then try this one, then try this one. And, you know, my advice is always whenever you start an herbal protocol, give it 6 to 8 weeks to really give it a fair shake. See if there's any element of improvement, and it really, if there's no change whatsoever after that time period, it's time to try something different. But if you feel like there's been improvement, even if the improvement's relatively small, it tells you you're on the right track and at least gives you an idea that it's worth continuing on that pathway. But, you know, I think I talk about 4 or 5, you know, of those protocols in my book. But again, there are really numerous ones. And again, I think if you look at what the herbs are doing individually, they're, you know, again, reducing inflammation, killing the organism, you know, doing all these things, you know, that Lyme does to the body. So the end result is really kind of the same. It's just a function of how you happen to interact with each herbal formula, what works better for you. And I've had some people that start on one protocol, They don't really feel like they're getting a lot of improvement. We move into a different protocol and it makes a world of difference. So it really is just a function of finding what works best for your body. But again, I give you very specific herbs, dosing. So again, this is really something that anybody can do at home on their own.
Great, great. We only have about a minute or so. Can you just quickly tell us the fourth and fifth part of your plan before we say goodbye?
Sure. Yeah, the fourth part is really about environment. So I just talk about, you know, clean up your environment, get rid of anything that's a known toxin, a chemical that you don't need to be exposed to because that can undermine your immune system. I talk a lot about mold. Make sure that, you know, you don't have any mold in your home that might be making you feel sick. Mold's the one thing I find probably mimics Lyme more than anything else. And then the last part's really just about lifestyle. You know, sleep is critically important for healing, and so many Lyme patients don't get good sleep. So again, I outline very specific protocol on getting deeper, more restful sleep. I talk about moving your body, getting good exercise, even when you've got limited mobility. There's something anybody can do. And then the last part's really just about dealing with your mind and your emotional part, and make sure that you've got a good support network around you that you can help vent and share what you're going through, because a lot of people really don't understand what it's like when you have Lyme. So whether it's a therapist or a Lyme support group, I just think it's important that you have some place that's safe for you that you can go and really talk about the things that you've been experiencing.
Oh, great. God, such great information, Dr. Darren. Where can we find your book and more information about you?
Yeah, so the best place is just to go to my website. It's DarrenIngelsND.com. That's DarrenIngelsND.com, and we have information about the book, and we'd love for people to follow us and just get more useful information on how to deal with Lyme and other types of health-related issues.
Thank you so much. Really, really happy that you're here. The book is called The Lyme Solution, a five-part plan to fight the inflammatory autoimmune response and beat Lyme disease. Thanks again, Dr. Darren. Really happy that you're here. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this show today. Now, if you've learned something new that will help you reach your ultimate wellness, please share the show with your friends and family and go to iTunes and give us some of your awesome feedback. The support is greatly appreciated. Do connect with us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you need any guidance and want to dig deeper into your chronic health issues, I do phone and Skype consultations with people all around the world. Just go to my website, drsuzanne.com, for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.